All right, welcome to the deep dive. Today we're going to be jumping headfirst into a pretty major shift in how we think about juvenile justice. We're talking about the 2018 Washington Supreme Court case, State v. Bassett.
Yeah, this one's a big one. And it goes way beyond just like one single court decision, you know? It really forces us to ask, can a state's constitution on its own offer more protection for young people facing life sentences, even compared to the federal Bill of Rights?
Really interesting stuff. And for today's deep dive, we've got a couple of things to help us unpack all of this. We've got the legal brief for State v. Bassett, which lays out all the arguments, and we've also got some background information to give us context.
Right, so we can sort of set the stage. And our goal today is to understand, really understand, why Washington State now has this rule that says you can't sentence juveniles to life without parole under their constitution, and what that actually means for the law in general.
Absolutely. To make sure we're all on the same page, let's start with the facts of this case. They're pretty brutal. Back in 1996, a 16-year-old kid named Brian Bassett committed a truly horrific crime. He killed his parents and his younger brother.
Yeah, a really tragic situation. And because of this, he was originally given a sentence that ended up getting a lot of attention years later.
So what was that initial sentence?
So Bassett was sentenced to 3 life sentences, consecutive too, and without the possibility of parole. This was based on the law at the time, which made those kinds of sentences mandatory for certain crimes. But then things change.
Things change big time. 2012, the Supreme Court hands down the Miller v. Alabama decision. That case was a game changer when it came to sentencing juveniles. Could you remind us what that ruling was all about?
You got it. In a nutshell, Miller said that mandatory life without parole for juveniles, unconstitutional. The Supreme Court recognized something really important in that case. They said, children, they're different. They have to be treated differently by the law, especially when you're talking about these super serious penalties. And as you can imagine, this ruling had a direct impact on Brian Bassett's case.
Of course, it had to be reviewed. So after Miller, what happened?
Right. So because of the Miller decision, the trial court had to hold a new sentencing hearing for Bassett. They were supposed to take into account his age at the time of the crime, you know, and all the other stuff that might make his situation less severe. But guess what?
They still gave him life without parole.
Exactly. They went ahead and gave him the same sentence again. And, you know, this really set the stage for the big appeal that went all the way up to the Washington Supreme Court.
And that brings us to the heart of what we're talking about today, the big question this case raises. Did giving a juvenile like Bassett a sentence of life without parole, even after considering his age, violate the Washington State Constitution?
Yeah, specifically Article 1, Section 14, the part that says cruel punishment is a no-go. The argument was that no matter how you look at it, for a kid, that kind of sentence is just plain cruel under Washington standards.
So Washington State has its own separate bar for what's considered cruel punishment.
Interesting.
But to really get how the state Supreme Court reached their decision, a pretty groundbreaking one, we got to understand the legal tools they used. They didn't just follow the standard state law, did they?
Nope, not at all. They actually made a conscious choice to change their approach. For ages, Washington courts used what we call the FAME proportionality test. Think of it like a scale. Does the punishment, how tough it is, match the crime, how bad it was? Under this way of thinking, you could maybe justify life without parole, even for a juvenile, if the crime was just horrific enough.
FAME. So it all hinges on that direct connection between the crime and the punishment.
Yeah.
But if I'm remembering this right, the Washington Supreme Court did something different in Bassett's case when it came to juveniles and life without parole.
Right, exactly. They ditched FAME and went with a different tool altogether. It's called the categorical bar analysis. It's the same approach the U.S. Supreme Court has used in cases like Graham v. Florida, which was about life sentences for juveniles, but in cases that didn't involve murder. The basic idea is that there are certain punishments that are just always unconstitutional for specific groups of people, no matter what they did.
I see. So instead of asking, okay, was life without parole a proportionate punishment for what Bassett did?
Mm-hmm.
The court in Washington asked, hold on, is this kind of sentence ever okay for a juvenile, period, under our state constitution? That's a huge shift in perspective.
Huge. And they made it very clear why they made this change. They flat out said that simply being a juvenile, with all the unique things that come with being young, like how your brain's still developing, well, that gives you a special status under the Constitution, one that needs extra protection. They felt that the old FAME test just couldn't deal with these fundamental differences between juveniles and adults when it comes to things like how responsible they are for their actions and their potential to change.
Gotcha. So they're using this categorical bar approach now. What were the main arguments Justice Owens used in the majority opinion to say that juvenile life without parole is just straight up cruel punishment under the Washington Constitution?
Okay, so Justice Owens, in the majority opinion, their argument rested on three main pillars. The first one was about national consensus. They pointed out that a big majority of states, something like 81% at the time, had already either completely rejected or severely limited the use of juvenile life without parole. And to them, this was a clear sign that our understanding of justice and how we punish young offenders was changing.
Makes sense. Courts often look at what other states are doing to gauge how society's views on things are evolving. What about the second big argument?
The second one was all about the science. The court really dug into the research on how the adolescent brain develops, you know, the impulsivity, how easily they can be swayed by their peers, all that. They even used the term transient rashness to describe some of the behaviors you see in young people. And their point was, a permanent sentence like life without parole just doesn't make sense when you consider how much a young person can still grow and mature and change. Basically, a bad decision at 16 shouldn't define your whole life, especially when your brain is literally still under construction.
Powerful stuff. Science backs up the idea that kids aren't just miniature adults. So what was that third and final argument?
All right, for the third one, they called it a penological failure, which is a fancy way of saying that life without parole for juveniles just doesn't work when it comes to the goals of punishment, especially rehabilitation. Given everything we just talked about, how juveniles are still developing, a sentence that basically says a young person is beyond hope, well, the court saw that as just plain excessive retribution. It goes against the whole idea of modern justice, which is supposed to be about second chances and the possibility of change.
And reading through the brief, you can really feel the weight of their words. There are some phrases from Justice Owens' opinion that just stick with you.
Oh, absolutely. Like when they echoed the U.S. Supreme Court saying children are different, that was a big deal. It just drives home this key principle in how we deal with juvenile justice. And they also didn't shy away from the harsh reality. They talked about the harsh nature of sentencing a juvenile to die in prison. They didn't mince words about the weight of that kind of sentence on a young life.
So we've got this strong majority opinion based on national trends, the science of adolescent development, and a new way of thinking about the purpose of punishment for juveniles. But as you often see in big legal cases, there was a dissenting opinion too. What were Justice Stevens' main points of disagreement?
Right. Justice Stevens had some important things to say in his dissent. His main point was that Miller v. Alabama, that big Supreme Court case we talked about, well, it didn't completely ban life without parole for juveniles. It just zeroed in on those mandatory sentences, the ones that didn't take the kid's age and other stuff into account. Justice Stevens argued that as long as those things are considered, like they were in Bassett's resentencing, then giving a juvenile life without parole is still okay, constitutionally speaking. It's rare, sure, but it's not off the table under federal law.
So the dissent was saying that Miller was more about making sure courts followed a certain process, considering the kid's age, rather than putting a hard limit on the sentence itself.
Exactly. Justice Stevens also pointed out that Washington State had actually already passed a law, a Miller fix, they called it, that made it crystal clear that judges had to consider a juvenile's age and all the other relevant stuff when sentencing them for aggravated murder. His argument was that this new law already took care of the concerns the Supreme Court had in Miller, so the Washington Supreme Court's decision to completely ban juvenile life without parole was overstepping. It wasn't necessary.
So part of the dissent's argument was about separation of powers. The idea that the court was butting into the legislature's job by making this blanket ban. Classic judicial activism argument.
Right on. Justice Stevens also worried about what this ban would mean in practice. He said, look, there might be cases, even involving kids, where the crime is so terrible, so awful, that life without parole is the only punishment that fits. And he questioned whether a total ban would take away the court's ability to do what needs to be done in those extreme situations.
So at its core, the disagreement boils down to this question. Should there be a bright line rule, no juvenile life without parole, no exceptions, or should judges have some wriggle room to give that sentence in the most extreme cases as long as they've considered the kid's age and all that?
Exactly. The majority went with the hard and fast rule, focusing on how unique and full of potential young people are, while the dissent was all about giving judges flexibility when faced with truly horrific crimes and respecting the legislature's role in setting punishments.
Now let's shift gears and look at the bigger picture, the impact of the Bassett decision. The legal brief makes it pretty clear that this ruling goes above and beyond what federal law requires. How big of a deal is that?
It's a really big deal. As we've been talking about Miller v. Alabama, that big Supreme Court case, it only outlawed mandatory juvenile life without parole. But Bassett, it goes further. It says, under the Washington State Constitution, you can't give any juvenile life without parole, even if the judge thinks it's the right call after considering their age and everything else. That option is gone, period.
That is a major difference. So, on a practical level, what happened in Washington State after this decision?
Well, the ruling had a direct impact on people who were already serving juvenile life without parole sentences in Washington. Something like 27 prisoners became eligible for new sentencing hearings because of Bassett. Their cases had to be looked at again, and new sentences had to be given, taking the court's decision into account.
Wow, so one state Supreme Court decision directly affected the lives of 27 people. That's pretty amazing. But beyond those immediate practical consequences, why is State v. Bassett so important in the grand scheme of things? Why should legal scholars, lawyers, and especially law students be paying close attention to this case?
Bassett is a powerful statement about the children are different principle, specifically when it comes to state constitutional law. It's a loud and clear message that the fact that juveniles are still developing, that has to be front and center when we're talking about the most serious punishments. And this decision could very well influence how other state courts interpret their own constitutional bans on cruel and unusual punishment, especially when it comes to sentencing young people. We might see more states following Washington's lead and saying, no more juvenile life without parole, period.
And it also opens the door for other legal challenges. Right? Could people start arguing against other long sentences for juveniles, even if they're not life without parole, using the same logic from Bassett, that it's cruel and unusual to give a kid a super long sentence because they're different, they can change, all that?
You bet. The core reasoning in Bassett, this idea that kids aren't as blameworthy as adults, that they have a better chance of turning their lives around, that locking them up forever just doesn't fit, well, that could definitely be used to fight other long sentences for juveniles. It's not just about life without parole. It's about the whole idea of how we punish young people.
This leads to a really interesting question that came up in our background material. Does the Bassett decision mean that we're going to see more and more neuroscience, the science of the brain, being used to interpret the Constitution, especially when it comes to sentencing and juvenile justice?
It's a good sign that we're moving in that direction. The fact that the majority in Bassett leans so heavily on what science tells us about adolescent brain development, it shows that the legal system is starting to recognize that how a kid's brain works has a huge impact on their actions, their decisions, and how responsible they are for what they do. This case could be a real turning point, leading to a more scientifically sound approach to juvenile justice in the future.
Let's wrap up with some key takeaways for all the law students out there listening. What are the big lessons they should learn from the Bassett case?
All right, there are a few crucial lessons here for anyone who's going to be working in the legal world. First off, Bassett is a powerful reminder that state constitutions aren't just copies of the federal constitution. They have their own power, and they often give people more rights than the federal Bill of Rights does. This case is a perfect example of that. States can and do go further than the federal government when it comes to protecting individual rights.
That's such a fundamental point that a lot of people miss. What else should they take away from this case?
Second, Bassett really highlights how important it is to pick the right legal strategy, the right way of analyzing a problem. The Washington Supreme Court's decision to move away from that old Fain test and use the categorical bar analysis instead, that was a game changer. As a lawyer, knowing these different legal tools and when to use them is key.
Totally agree. What other insights does Bassett offer?
Third, while it wasn't the main focus in Bassett, the case kind of touches on how international law and global norms can be relevant when interpreting parts of state constitutions that deal with human rights and how we treat young people. Even though the court in this case focused on what was happening in the U.S., the fact that there's a worldwide movement against juvenile life without parole, that matters. It's part of the bigger picture. Fourth, Bassett shows us how powerful amicus briefs can be, especially the ones that bring in expert knowledge, like the briefs in this case that talked about adolescent brain development. Those briefs can really sway judges and shape the law.
And one last but really important thing for law students to remember when it comes to these kinds of cases.
You got it. Don't mix up how the Eighth Amendment works under the U.S. Constitution with how states interpret their own bans on cruel punishment. Like we saw in Bassett, Washington State has its own unique standard under Article 1, Section 14. And that standard can, and in this case did, give people more protection than the federal Constitution. Knowing the ins and outs of your own state's constitution is crucial.
This has been an awesome deep dive into State v. Bassett and what it all means. It really makes you think, doesn't it?
For sure. It forces us to re-examine some really basic questions about justice, punishment, and how our legal system should treat young people.
Before we wrap up, here's something to chew on, something that builds on what we've been talking about but takes it a step further. You know how Washington got rid of juvenile life without parole in Bassett? Well, they also got rid of the death penalty for adults not too long ago. So the question is, how do those two things fit together? Can a state say no to the ultimate punishment for both kids and adults and still have a system that has some kind of ultimate punishment? It raises some really tricky questions about what we consider decent and humane as a society and what the point of punishment really is. Keep thinking about the issues raised by Bassett, the whole idea of juvenile justice, what it means to be truly responsible for your actions, and how our understanding of what's fair just keeps changing. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.